You're listening to Saxon's Creed Radio Show. I'm David James, and I'm your host. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, dear kinswomen and kinsmen. It's wonderful to be able to speak to you again this week. I hope you're enjoying the shows. I hope you're participating in the investigation into the Apostle Paul's gospel. I will tell you that the more I look into it, the more I'm learning about the scriptures and things like that. So it helps you. This study piece will help us all to learn much about history and be able to connect many dots. See, I didn't know about the three Jewish popes in the Middle Ages. And so that helps to understand that why we have Jewish popes today, and many, many other things. As I was out on the land today with Miss Elke, I was going to do some walking, and I decided, well, let's cut down some of these trees. They're small trees, and they're, you know, taking up space, and there's a lot of thorns. And I had asked the father, you know, because of previous times out there, these thorns are vicious, and I mean vicious. And I asked the father, well, what is the purpose of these thorns? And the first thing that I thought of was it was to remind us of how he suffered for us. They put a crown of thorns on him, and if you've never experienced thorns, you wouldn't understand just how vicious something like that is. And that was the first thing that came to my mind. And then as I'm out in the fields and seeing things, I realized that I think the purpose for thorns were to protect the young trees as they grow up. Because it seems that everywhere these thorns are, they're right with these trees when they're small. Maybe it prevents deer or whatever from kicking the tree down. I don't really know. I guess they smash their hoofs on trees and things like that. I don't know if it's to sharpen them or whatever it is, but maybe to get dirt off. I don't really know. But it seems that these thorns are always near the trees, the small ones, the young ones. And while I was cleaning up today, I thought, wow, the Apostle Paul said he had a thorn. I discussed this just recently. A brother wanted to know what that thorn was, and he was interested in that. And I thought, well, if the thorns out in the field protect young trees so that they can grow to maturity, perhaps the Apostle Paul had a thorn so that it protected young Christians in some way so that they could grow to maturity. I don't know. It's a very interesting thought. You know, I don't know if that's the truth or not, but it's very interesting. That's all I can say to you. But I'll tell you something right now. Another thing about them that maybe you don't know, and I'm sure that there's other kinds of thorns too, but the ones I see are red and green. These red stalks are huge, and they grow taller than we are, you know what I mean? And the green ones are a much thinner stalk. And then there's the tree that has these long thorns, which is much less vicious. Even though their thorns are pointing out straight, they're red too, believe it or not. Funny how the devil's favorite color is green, and his children's favorite color, well, is just red because it always has been. You know what I mean? So I find that interesting. I'm not saying that there's not a possibility that there are thorns that are other colors or something like that. But all I'm saying is it's very strange. That's all. I don't know which of the three. I know that the red ones are bigger, and they are vicious. And the green ones are very tenacious. They stick onto you. And one of the things I've learned with thorns is if you get aggressive with them, you'll be hurt. But if you gently pick them up, lightly touching them and bring them to the place where you're going to burn them or whatever it is, you'll be much better. So when it was said to Saul about him, it is hard for thee to kick against the pricks. Well, you know, it's a very interesting thought. I don't think that that was the Father or it was Jesus Christ either. Of course, that fellow that I think it is, the Lightbringer, he would know a lot about that. Because the ram from the foundation of the world got caught in the thicket. He made sure he got caught in the thicket so that the devil did. So that the possibility of Isaac being killed would take place. It's funny how in one way he didn't want him to obey, and in another way, he did want to kill him. So the devil was caught in his own catch-22 there. And the ram from the foundation of the world, which is the typification of the lamb from the foundation of the world, who also got caught in the thicket with the crown of thorns put on his head. See, that's something I've never heard anywhere before, and I've talked about that many times over the years, because it's so intriguing to me. You have Abraham, the father of all of our nations, let's say, and you have his son Isaac, and he's going to sacrifice his son to obey the Father in heaven. And the ram from the foundation of the world gets caught in the thicket. And so, the same thing, you have the Father who puts his word in a flesh body, and as he is going to the sacrifice, so to speak, he is caught in the thicket. The lamb is caught in the thicket. Very interesting. The lamb from the foundation of the world. So there are two things. There's the ram from the foundation of the world and the lamb from the foundation of the world. Do you not find that interesting? And that's what I had said all along, that since Abraham obeyed, see, he didn't just have faith, you see, like the Apostle Paul talks about. He actually obeyed the Father. He loved the Father, and he obeyed the Father. These are the keys to us passing the test. It's not just faith. If it was just faith, we wouldn't have to obey. We wouldn't have to do anything. We could just say, well, I got my free ticket. I believe. Don't you believe? You know what I mean? It's that type of a thing. That's the kind of a thing the Apostle Paul's gospel brings forth is, all you have to do is believe, confess his name and believe, and you're in. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to obey the Father. You don't have to love the Father. You don't have to anything. You're in. And it doesn't matter if you're a dog or a sheep or a pig, a swine, you're in. See, this is wrong. And this is juxtaposed to Jesus Christ's gospel, period. I mean, it's just that simple. I mean, you know, it's, you know, you may be mad at me for looking into this, let's say. Maybe that I'm not seeing a lot of opposition. I'm seeing some people that are willing to look. I'm not hearing any reports for what they're, you know, many reports. I'm hearing some reports from people, but not many. And, you know, are you learning anything from this series? And, you know, there are people that are making comments, though. And it's mostly been positive. I mean, there's been very little opposition to this investigation. However, I do get a big kick out of, I noticed that on my channel on BitChute, you'll go up a couple of increments, you know what I mean? And then all of a sudden, you know, you'll see it go down a couple of increments. So somebody came in, you'll get a kick out of this. They heard the word Jew, or they heard, oh, he's looking at the Apostle Paul. This must be a devil. And they quit the channel. Then all of a sudden, they're back 2 days later. I don't know if that's really, I can't really say for 100%, but it cracks me up to see this because I've noticed this when it was YouTube too. There would be people that would join the channel, they'd get shocked, but then they'd go away thinking, but that is interesting, and they'd join again. I did see some people actually, on YouTube, you could see who joined. And so I saw people that joined the channel, you know, six times. So, you know, it's kind of amusing to see the people come, and a portion of those have to be people that join, you know, they say, well, man, that's shocking. I don't know if I can listen to something like that. It's just too much, too heavy. You know, then all of a sudden, but they're attracted. I mean, you have to be attracted to the truth. And so sometimes we just have to approach the truth, and we have to just know that it's important. We can't be running away from the truth. It's just not feasible. It's not right. But I don't know what you think about all that thorn stuff, but let me tell you something right now. If you've never been out in the field with these thorns, you would realize just what a cruel act it was to put a crown of thorns on his head. You have no idea, if you haven't dealt with thorns, what I'm talking about. They're very sticky. They're very sharp. And the harder you go against them, the harder they go into you. That's what it means. It is hard for thee to kick against the pricks. So that's what I was saying. The devil knows about these thorns. And funny that he would use that kind of a term. So you make of it what you will. I do think it's quite interesting, though. I mean, this is so exciting to me to be able to investigate these things, to find the truth about things that people have not known about. Now, there are people that have talked about the Apostle Paul for maybe years. I really don't know. But everybody is fearful of talking about it. Everybody that has presented it has gone by the wayside. Because people just aren't willing to look that deep into the truth. Sacred cows. But you know something? I'm going to tell you that when this investigation gets through with, there'll be people coming on to the investigation all the time. I'm seeing people come on my site from many different places that I've never seen before. Because this is something big. This is something so huge that if all of Christianity could find out about it, we could turn it right around on its heels. If they realize that the gospel of the Apostle Paul is not the gospel of Jesus Christ, you better believe that this would be something huge, something that would rock the world. It explains so many things, you know, as well. It really does. It explains the Catholic Church. It explains them calling themselves fathers and all the different things, and the Jewish aspect of the Catholic Church. It's just the Babylonian aspect. It's what it is. Babylon can't help but love itself. You see, the Jews love the Catholic Church. When they want to hide as crypto-Jews, most of them hide in the Catholic Church, other than somebody like Harry Reid, who said he was a Mormon, which Mormonism does the first 3 degrees of Masonry, and so on and so forth. So the Catholic Church is Mother Babylon. You know what I mean? It is. You see now that the people that are hanging around the Catholic Church are wearing yarmulkes. And we now know that the Catholic Church was saved by a Jewish Pope, Gregory the Sixth. And we see that our scriptures were in the hands of Mother Babylon for many, many, many years. No wonder they were allowed to do the things they were allowed to do. And then we found out about Martin Luther, who, though he found out about the Jews, he fully ascribed to antinomianism and Paul's gospel, which now brought that into the Protestant church, that poison. So the poison was transferred from the Catholic Church into the denominations. You wonder why we have Judaized Christianity? Interesting, this Cornwallis character. He obviously wasn't a prophet, but he could certainly see what was going on at the time and what would go on. Very, very interesting. And it's titillating. It's exciting to know and to find out the history. I'm interested in this Pope named Benedict IX, who abdicated and allowed Gregory the Sixth from this Perleone family. This family was an Italian Jewish family, and they had three popes. But Benedict the Ninth was somebody who was wanted to marry his cousin and all kinds of crazy things. Interesting, the name Benedict, like Benedict Arnold, whom I haven't looked into yet, but we will look into that. You see, I know Arnold's a Jew name. And it's just interesting that this is the biggest traitor. Well, see, I wouldn't even agree with that. The biggest traitor in America. We have all kinds of traitors today. But supposedly Benedict Arnold is, at least from that time, the biggest traitor of America. And of course, would it not be a Jew? Would that surprise you that it was a Jew? Not me. It wouldn't surprise me at all. I don't know what he did, but we'll find out. Believe me, we will. And it's just interesting to see all of this, because this connects more and more and more dots. And wasn't the Pope that was before this guy that abdicated himself, he's still alive, Beretta? Supposedly it's Beretta who played Benedict. You know Beretta, right? You know who I'm talking about? Well, anyway, this guy, his name is Benedict, I believe. Strange name. Because a traitor in America is named Benedict. It would be funny that he would pick such a name. So why don't we start looking into our subject matter? I wanted to share those things with you. And if you didn't hear, the Word of the Most High show was done last night, as well as Rabbit Hole Radio was done yesterday. And I talked about how we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principality, you know, which is Ephesians, I believe it's 6:12. And I said that that's a lie. I wrestle against my own flesh and blood, don't you? And what would we call war but a wrestle of flesh and blood? What would we call anything? I mean, there, you know, you're dealing with your own flesh and blood. You're dealing with your flesh and blood family that are against you because you believe in Jesus Christ, let's say. Of course, this is not a true statement. We wrestle not against flesh and blood, for we do wrestle against flesh and blood. This is the Apostle Paul's attempt to spiritualize everything. Spiritual Israel, spiritual, you're the Abraham's spiritual seed. We're going to graft you in. It's not real. There is no spiritual seed of Abraham. There is no spiritual Israel. This is all to do with blood. And the Apostle Paul mentions a couple of different times in Scripture that we shouldn't bother with foolish genealogies. And yet the Scriptures, other than the Apostle Paul, are all about genealogies, aren't they? All about the bloodline. Like the father, if it was a foolish thing to waste time about foolish genealogies, why would the father care if Noah was perfect in his generations? He could have just picked anybody off the street that was a just man, let's say, which probably there aren't that many, you know. But what I'm saying is that if bloodline didn't matter, then why would Jesus have come for the lost sheep of the house of Israel only? It's all about bloodline. It's all about, the Scriptures are all about the seed line of Adam, the bloodline of Adam. It's his story, history. You see? And Jesus Christ, it was important that he would be in the bloodline of Adam, David, Isaiah, Moses, etc., etc. That none of them are Jews. You know that. If you think they're Jews, you've been Jewed. You've been tricked. The Apostle Paul says, don't worry about bloodlines. That's not important. We can graft you right in spiritually into spiritual Israel, or we can make you part of Abraham's seed spiritually. You don't have to be part of the bloodline. Everybody's invited. Every dog, every pig, every swine. And yet the Scriptures tell us, cast not your pearls before swine. It is not meet to give the children's bread to dogs. You see, dogs are without because they are of not of proper bloodline. Every plant not planted by my heavenly Father will be rooted up. Jews are not planted by the heavenly Father. When the angel in the garden had sex with Eve, that was not from the Father. That was not the will of the Father, although it was let to be happened so that he could let Cain go, like I said, knowing that down the generations they would crucify him when he was in the flesh and that he would redeem his own children. His own children. It's not meat to give the children's bread. The children. Whose children? The Father in heaven. And who are his children? You see, one of the biggest lies that you've ever heard and you didn't realize it is, we are all God's children. Queers are God's children. Transvestites are God's children. Jews are God's children. No, 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 no. That's a lie. And that's a doozy, a whopper, as they would call it. No, we are not all God's children, or he would have never said such a thing. Because he would have thought this dog was God's children. See, a dog, what it means in the sense of these people from Samaria were race mixed because of Assyria, according to William G. Finley. And that's what he was talking about. Samaria had become race mixed. They were not pure in their bloodlines anymore. When you're not pure in your bloodlines, you're called a mutt or a mongrel. A mutt is a dog. Mutt and Jeff. How about a new look at that kind of thing? Mutt and Jeff. Ladies and gentlemen, I love to make you think. I love to think myself, so why wouldn't I want you to think? I want you to know everything. I want you to know the truth so that you will be set free from the lies of this world. Set free from the deceptions of the devil and his children. You see, if we were all the Father's children, Jesus would have never said that his father and their father were different. In John chapter 8, remember my special teaching on John chapter 8. I'll try to repost it so that you can hear it. It's called The Devil's in the Details. It's very important. The Father gave me that specially. And though the King James version was trying to be sly, they caught themselves in their own net with this particular chapter, John chapter 8. And literally, the devil, their father, is in the details. So if we were all God's children, then they wouldn't have a different father than us. They wouldn't be born of fornication or adulterated, an adulterated generation. You see? Most things can be proven with just pure common sense. You don't need any scientific proof of what I'm telling you. It's just pure common sense. I find it just so exciting. That's all I can tell you. I just love catching these people with their own words, catching them with their own nets that they tried to catch us with. So, we're on page 111 on Be Wise as Serpents. Why not delve in and get a little of this going? The Prière de Zion and the Jus Luminati. In order to explain the connection, let us cover the structure of Masonry. One of the modern known groups of the Jus Luminati is known as the Ancient Order of Oriental Templars. Let's just stop and think about that. The Ancient Order of Oriental Templars, yet these are white men. Or are they Jew? Now, Aleister Crowley was a member of this and many other organizations. Ordo Templi Orientis. You know that the Jews are race mixed with the Orientals, right? Both in Japan, China, and throughout any of the Asia countries, they like the Khazarian Jews, they're Turco-Mongolian. You see? So funny that it would be called the Ancient Order of Oriental Templars, Ordo Templi Orientis. However, its own esoteric name is Order of Tuov. That's T-O and then O-V. Its publication was the Equinox. According to the Equinox, Volume 3, Number 1, 1919, the OTO is a body of initiates in whose hands are concentrated the wisdom and knowledge of the following bodies. Listen to this. So listen once again. The OTO is a body of initiates in whose hands are concentrated the wisdom and knowledge of the following bodies. Listen to these names. The Gnostic Catholic Church. The Order of the Knights of the Holy Ghost. The Order of the Illuminati. The Order of the Temple, Knights Templar. The Order of the Knights of St. John. The Order of the Knights of Malta, which is another Catholic organization. The Order of the Knights of the Holy Sepulchre. The Hidden Church of the Holy Grail. The Hermetic Brotherhood of Light. There you are again. You know what light that is, don't you? The Order of the Holy Royal Ark of Enoch. The Ancient and Primitive Rite of Masonry, 33 degrees. The Rite of Memphis, 97 degrees. The Rite of Mizraim, 90 degrees. the ancient and accepted Scottish Rite of Masonry, 33 degrees. The Swedenborgian Rite of Masonry, 9 degrees. The Order of Martinists, 3 degrees. The Order of Sat Bahai, 14 degrees, and many other orders of equal merit, if of less fame. End of quote. It is clear from reading their own publications, the Equinox, published from 1909 to 1913, that the OTO has succeeded in placing their people in the leadership positions of those listed orders and rites. Aleister Crowley was the leader of the OTO when he was alive. Can the OTO's literature be taken seriously, that it concentrated the esoteric gnosis of the above groups? Okay, yes. An examination of the leadership of the above groups shows interlocking directories of power. Those interlocking directories also interlocked with the OTO. To belong to the OTO, initiates pledged, listen carefully, please, Nashab. To belong to the OTO, initiates pledged loyalty to unseen superiors. Hello? You know who unseen superiors might be? Why, the hierarchy. Remember the externalization of, well, if they're going to be externalized, they must be internalized and not seen at this point, right? The unseen hand. The OTO was openly satanic, worshiping Satan and the Antichrist. The Black Mass is performed by them, and their rituals include blood sacrifices, excrement, horrible sexual acts, etc. Notice the commonality with Judaism. You know that that woman there, that filthy, dirty, satanic woman who was using menstrual blood and excrement to make paintings, remember a little while ago? And she was friends with Hillary Clinton and everybody, you see? It's all there for you to see. It's all there for you to understand. The Masonic pamphlet, The Grand Mystic Temple, describes how the Scottish Rite Supreme Grand Council in America, the Rite of Mizraim, and the Rite of Memphis allied themselves together. Allied. The Rite of Mizraim and Memphis had already been allied prior to this union. That's why I called it the Rite of, I called it Memphis Mizraim. To illustrate the interlocking directories of various rites and orders, some more openly occultic and satanic than others, let us consider the following men. The following were compiled from Masonic esoteric sources, too numerous to footnote. Let me just take a sip of my iced coffee here. Aleister Crowley, 1875 to 1947. It was 20 years ago today. Sergeant Pepper taught the band to play. It was going in and out of style. You know, that's who Aleister Crowley is. He's Sergeant Pepper. For Crowley's personal description of his initiation to the 33rd degree of the Scottish Rite, read his book Confessions. He was the following: Ancient and Primitive Rite of Memphis, Patriarch Grand Administrator General, 96th degree, Scottish Rite 33rd degree, Rite of Mizraim 90th degree, Order of the Golden Dawn, Ruling Chief or Supreme Magus, Order of Avtov, Chief Magus, or Frater, a.k.a. Master Therian, Stella Matutina, the Morning Star, that means, Chief and other things of Jewish ancestry. So I think he's saying that Aleister Crowley is of Jewish ancestry. Now, I didn't know that, but it makes sense to me. He was known as 666 the Beast and proud of it. What's even more interesting is this William Schneblin, who is pretending he's a Christian so that he can just add another hat onto all the hats he's had. He's been a Catholic priest. He's been a Mormon priest. He's been a satanic priest. He's had the At one point, I saw him have the yarmulke on his head. It's and more. Now he's a Christian, he's exposing Freemasonry and other things while he's laughing about him and his wife doing satanic rituals with snakes and things like that. And he looks upon his past very happily. He's not ashamed of it. So believe it or not, he was a 90th degree of this these things and many of these degrees. He is like a modern-day Aleister Crowley, and people do not even realize what they're dealing with when they're dealing with this fellow. They think he's a Christian minister. I mean, it's not fun. It's just crazy that people, you know, like this was talked about with William G. Finley, that at some point, the reason why Ephesus was, the Church of Ephesus was railed by the Father a bit was because after a period of time, anybody that said, you know, said the name Jesus Christ was an apostle. And that's just the way it is with this fellow I'm talking about, Schneblin. He's a modern day Aleister Crowley. He's probably trying to outdo Aleister Crowley if that was even possible. And he's got people hoodwinked into thinking that he is, even this fellow writing this book thinks he ascribed to Christianity. You see, I told you that that's not the Father's way of doing things. This is what put me on to the Apostle Paul, that the Prophecy Club has many such fellows like this William Schneblin, and they're all supposedly ex-satanic priests and ex-this and that, and now they're prophets, instant prophets of the Father. No, sorry. Sorry, Charlie. That ain't going to work. That's not the Father's way. Next fellow, Adolf Isaac Cremieux, 1796 to 1880. He was the following: Scottish Rite 33rd degree and Grand Master, Alliance Israelite Universelle, part founder and twice later president, Carbonari, that's Italian, member, Order of Mizraim, Supreme Council, I believe Mizraim means Egypt, by the way, Supreme Council, 90th degree, Grand Orient, 33rd degree and Grand Master, friend of Karl Marx, the Rothschilds, and Maurice Joly, a Jew. So this, we've got two so far, and they're both Jews. John Yarker, 1833 to 1913. He was the following. And this guy, whoa, he's big. Listen to this. This is a long list. Scottish Rite, 33rd degree. Cernot Rite, 33rd degree. Ancient and Primitive Rite, Imperial Grand Hierophant, 97th degree, Rite of Mizraim, 90th degree, Royal Grand Commander of the Rose Croix and Kadosh, 1868 to 1874, Sat Bao of Prague, President and Co-Sponsor, Honorable Grand Master of Cuba, of Unit, Sup Ground, whatever this means, and of the Society of Alchemica, Grand Warden of Greece, Order of L'Hermétistique, 5th degree. I've never even heard of these things. Grand Chancellor of the Confederated Rites, 1882 and 1883. Rite of Swedenborg, Supreme Grand Master, Grand Representative of the Grand Lodge of Germany, 1902 to 1906. Rite of Ishmael, Head, Red Branch of Eri, Red Branch of Eri, Head, York Rite, Knights Templar Priest, 7th degree, Martinist Order, Delegate of the Supreme Council, friend of Henry J. Seymour and William Wynne Westcott, Fratres Lucius, Brothers of the Light, that means, Grand Lamaistic Order of Light, Crown of Kether, Societas Rosicruciana in Anglia, 9. Order of Tav Ov, that's the OTO. Boy, Mr. John Yacker's a busy man. He was real busy, wasn't he? William Wynne Westcott. Now, we know the name Wynn, W-Y-N-N, is a Jewish name. Nothing about this other fellow being Jew. Let's see if this one is. 1848 to 1925, William Wynn Westcott. He was the following. Scottish Rite, 30th degree. Cator Coronati, Research Lodge, G Master, Grand Master. Grand Lodge of England, Junior Grand Deacon. Societas Rosicruciana in Anglia, Secretary General and Supreme Magus, Head. Golden Dawn, Head. Rite of Swedenborg, Secretary. Royal Ark, Grand Standard Bearer, OTO, Regent of the Illuminati, supporter of H.P. Blavatsky, friend of Pappas and John Yarker, and Theodore Roos. Pappas, Dr. Gerald Encausse. He was the following, Order of Martinism, Grand Master, Rite of Mizraim, Grand Master, Rite of Memphis, Grand Master, Swedenborg Rite, Delegate for in France, Occult Advisor to Russian Tsar Nicholas II, Friend of the Duchess de Pomar, OTO Member, Theodore Roos. He was the following, Scottish Rite, 33rd degree, Rite of Mizraim, 90th degree, Rite of Memphis, 96th degree, Sovereign Grand Master General of those two rites, Esoteric Rosicrucians, Supreme Magus, Societas Rosicruciana in Anglia, the 8th, OTO, Fratu Superior, Superior Brother and Outer Head in Mundo, the world, Mundo, I believe is, and Friend of Pappas, Sovereign Grand Master General Ad Vitam, for the German Empire, Swedenborg Rite, founder of 6 lodges in Germany, and Provincial Grand Master, Albert Pike, 1809 to 1891. He was the following, Scottish Rite, Grand Commander of the Supreme Council, 33rd degree, York Rite, Knights Templar, Odds Fellows Member, Sovereign Pontiff of Universal Masonry, Palladium Rite, Reformed, full name, Free and Regenerated Palladium, excuse me. Founder, Supreme Grand College of Emeritus Masons, early Theosophical Society member, friend of Mazzini. What was the value of the union of the Scottish, Mizraim, and Memphis rites? What was the value of this union? The rites of Mizraim and Memphis are far more occultic and Gnostic than that of the Scottish Rite. If a neophyte was obviously interested in the occult and was lacking finances, this Masonic pamphlet, The Grand Mystique Temple, indicates he could be started at the 18th degree of the Scottish Rite, the Rose Croix of Herodom, and at the 46th degree at Mizraim. From there, he could progress in the three rites. There are numerous secret inter-office memo type, quote-unquote, papers that indicate that a Satanist, a Luciferian, listen carefully to this, that a Satanist, a Luciferian, a practitioner of black magic, or the like, has an easy time in Freemasonry because the upper degrees are controlled by men who will bend any rules to help them. Are you listening? Having a membership card is of limited value in visiting a foreign lodge. A dues card is important, showing that one's dues are all paid up. Certain questions will be asked, and certain parts of the rituals need to be quoted by memory to satisfy the lodge one is visiting. Now, let us look, for instance, picture an American Mason visiting an Irish lodge. He can go to the Freemasons' Hall in Dublin or to one of the provincial Masonic temples and be examined. This examination, though it is a courtesy, and it is up to the Grand Lodge's office whether they want to bother to interview him, by being interviewed by this American will then be vouched to attend any meeting in the Grand Lodge of Ireland. When attending, he will have to have been given the password of the first degree or other degree. However, if he has been vouched, he will know the passwords. One now can see the leverage in the Luciferian occultists have in Masonry. Again, one can now see the leverage the Luciferian occultists have in Masonry when the correct dues cards, diplomas, and passwords are given freely to them by the heads of these rites. Let's take a break and we'll continue. I don't know how interested in this stuff you are, but it shows me that just how wicked men are in this world. It shows me that there are men that will jump through any hoop they can jump through to get another title. Here I am, a titleless fellow. I don't need any titles. I don't care about any titles. I care about the Father. In other words, I'm not looking for titles. But these men obviously have put a lot of time into these evil organizations, these devil's organizations. And what do they think they will get out of this posthumously? Do they think they're going to be remembered in history? Yeah, we're talking about some of them now. But this is useless information in a sense, not really. But what I mean is, it's useless as far as their being famous or anything like that. Who cares about Albert Pike? These Masons do, but I don't. And I don't think you do either. So, let's return after this song. This one's from my Journey album. It's called Venus and Mars.
Another starry night, the glow of ever after, it shines in my eyes. I'm looking back to see just where it is I'm headed, so blind to the lie. The mirror's always for me, a child within a man. I just want to believe that somehow, somewhere out there, a perfect place exists to carry this dream. Carries the heat. I feel the desolation, so it's cold.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Saxon's Creed radio show, brought to you by DavidJamesBoston.com, your source for the truth. Yes, that was a song called Venus and Mars, and it featured violin, bow, guitar. In case you didn't know what you were listening to, I was playing that guitar with a violin bow. So, it is quite interesting, just while you and I had gone to work our whole lives, you know, these rich Jews and Jews that had nothing to do with their time, you see what they're doing with their time here, right? You see what they're up to. They're able to get heavily involved in black magic and evil. And it's very interesting that you would never even know this was happening, because they're not going to tell you what's happening in the news or anything like that. Anytime they want to show you a Jew or a Jew organization, they want to show its philanthropic side. Philanthropy, you know, its good side, like the Shriners, which is a filthy organization. They show you, oh, we have the burn hospitals. But they don't tell you how much profit they make off the burn hospitals. They just want you to know about the good part of it. There's a lot more than meets the eye, ladies and gentlemen. So let's continue here. The right of Mizraim and Memphis. Now, there's something right here. I was reading the first paragraph here, and I think this ought to speak volumes to you. These two rights, which are Mizraim and Memphis, although separate in some areas, are closely allied. Listen to this now. The right of Mizraim is mainly Jewish. The secret order of the Prière de Zion is also predominantly Jewish, the Priory of Zion. The B'nai B'rith seems to have taken over some of the rite of Mizraim influence upon Masonry, which is also totally Jewish, the B'nai B'rith, Brothers of the Covenant. But that's not the covenant with Yahweh, by the way. The rite of Memphis is not just European. Americans such as six-term governor of Wisconsin, Lucius Fairchild, Lucius, you know what that means, light, right? Lucius Fairchild, who was a 95th degree, are Memphis Rite Masons too. The Rite of Memphis, listen to this, the Rite of Memphis has Ormus in their ritual. What or who is Ormus? Ormus, or Ormuzd, was the supreme god of Mithraism in Zoroastrian thought. The Jews are primarily into Zoroastrianism, by the way. It was also known, you see, here it is, the Jews, I told you that the Talmud was not monotheistic, that Judaism, that pretends it's a religion, it's really paganism and it has many gods in it. It's not monotheistic whatsoever. It's tricks. They trick you and say they believe in one God, but here we listen to this, right? Ormuzd is the supreme god of Mithraism. You know who that is then, and that's Lucifer, right? In Zoroastrian thought. It was also the name by which the Prière de Zion allegedly went from the years of 1188 to 1306. In 1188, when the Order de Zion became the Prière de Zion, Priory of Zion, it took the subtitle Ormus until just before the arrest of the Templars Knights leaders. Listen to this carefully, please. The controversial protocols of Zion, it says Zion instead of Zion. Hiding things again? Listen. Now, we just read, I'm going to connect a dot for you very carefully. The rite of Mizraim is mainly Jewish. You understand that, right? Now, listen. The controversial protocols of Zion have been traced to the rite of Mizraim in Paris, to a Mason named Maurice Joly. So, the protocols of Zion, we know that it's Jewry's property, right? And they trace this rite to the order of Mizraim, which is a Jewish rite. Also, we knew that Jewry, in an auditorium, I believe it was either 1953 or I think it was 1953, though, that an auditorium, a Shriners auditorium, this was according to the book of B.F. Jackson, that they admitted, they didn't know that it wasn't an only Jew or Masonic audience, and they admitted that the priory, the protocols of the learned elders of Zion was Jewry's property. So we know that. But here's another confirmation of where it's come from. They try to tell you stories that it came from Russia, right? So it was traced to a Mason named Maurice Joly. People have raised a straw man in claiming that the conspiracy theories, quote-unquote, are based on the protocols of Zion. The protocols, whether they are of any significance or not, are a tiny atom of the mass of evidence. Even so, a lot of disinformation has spewed forth from the system against the protocols, and it continues to be printed, perhaps by agent provocateurs for the system. The book Warrant for Genocide, put out by Yale University, supposedly destroying the credibility of the protocols, is such poor thinking and pure nonsense. One wonders if that's the best argumentation against the protocols then the protocols must be valid. Well, I'll say this. A friend was speaking with me last week, one of our brothers, and he was talking about how this Jew was telling him that the protocols of the learned elders of Zion are a forgery or I don't know what it was. So another, like an imitation or something like that. You see, if it was forged, then there must be a real one. If it was an imitation of something, then it must have been, there must be a real one. You see, they use stupid excuses to try to say, oh, well, those, that's not true. And yet we know that everything in it is in operation, and that Henry Ford, who read it in his time, said it, all these things were in operation in his time. We know that Colonel Mandel House had his own personal copy of it. He was the handler of Woodrow Wilson, the Jew. Warrant for Genocide makes it appear that all anti-Jewishism comes from crazy people who use the protocols. The protocols themselves speak of a Masonic conspiracy, not a Jewish conspiracy. So why have the Jewish people never used that as a defense? Well, because they know that Jewry is run by Masonry is run by Jewry anyway, so it doesn't matter. And I heard Bill Cooper say that he says, oh, no, this is the Catholics. You see, they love to do this, these people. This is what they do. They lie. They give disinformation. But it all just comes down to it is Jewish property, and it is what they've been doing. Numerous researchers into the conspiracy have noticed heavy Jewish involvement. The lack of public response has resulted in some researchers believing that radical problems need radical solutions. Nesta Webster, who began neutral towards the Jews, ended up a diehard fascist in the 20s. She wrote The Need for Fascism in Great Britain. For the Christian, it would be worthwhile to take a fresh look at 1 Corinthians 13, which declares that no matter what worthwhile thing we do, if we do not have love, it is of no value. I'll say nothing about that. The religion called Mithra, Babylon, Mithras, Roman, Mitra, India, has spread over the known world during the first centuries AD. It was very popular. It had Kabbalistic thought, astrology, numerology, words of power, Greek philosophy, Babylonian myth, and a Gnostic dual theology which Masons like Albert Pike believed in. When Christianity became a recognized religion, it is a valid question to wonder which absorbed which, Mithraism or Christianity. Certain ideas of Mithraism continue to resurface under the label Christian. For instance, in Mithraism, which became known later as Gnosticism, there was an idea that after 6,000 years of man's existence, a golden age would come in. Now, where do we know that from? The Jehovah Witnesses, etc., etc., the Theosophy, etc., etc. Mithraism is so close to Masonry that those who study Mithraism have often commented that Freemasonry is the continuation of it. Mithraism absorbed occultic thought and was somewhat eclectic. Its followers held rituals for men only in caves or temples. Their rites reminded one of the Masonic rituals. In Israel, Masonic ceremonies are held in the caves of Hezekiah, which have a chamber about 130 feet underground below the Temple Mount, of where Herod's temple in Jerusalem was. The cave will seat about 200. The cave is near the Damascus Gate. The city of Jerusalem gives a special privilege to the Masons to use it. On the days of Masonic ceremonies, the caves, which are normally open to the public, are closed. Manly P. Hall claims the Masonic Eye comes from the supreme god Ahura Mazda, or Ormuzd, the same God they were just talking about with Mizraim. There are many similarities between Mithraism, the prior de Zion, and Masonry. See, now we're really connecting some serious dots to Jewry here. And this is very important for us to understand just what these rats are up to when you don't see them. In A Guide to the Gods, a referent works on pagan gods, the rite or religion of Mithra is described. Listen, it contained much symbolism, all with Masonic overtones. One can see in the appurtenances of Mithraism the germ of many secret society and occult rite, many exclusive cabal and clubs. In Mithraic Studies, an extensive compilation of studies on Mithraism, it states, undoubtedly ancient Mithraism, like Orthodox Freemasonry today, with which it has so much in common. Freemasonry has lots of spin-offs. Freemasonry is directly or indirectly the parent of all modern secret societies, good, bad, or indifferent. Cyclopedia of Fraternities. One outdated source indicates there are over 600 secret societies in the U.S., outdated though, utilizing Masonic symbolism and operating largely under Masonic influence, so that about every third male adult in the U.S. is a member of one or more of these societies. The 600 figure is outdated, and the actual number of secret societies has increased by several hundred more secret societies. See Chapter 2.3 for the spinoff chart. Some of the Masonic spinoffs have become such a part of normal life that the negative reactions of past years toward them are forgotten. Rotary, the Rotary Club, you've heard of it, right? Because of its Masonic control, hostility toward the Catholic Church, and its moral code, which in almost every particular resembles that of Freemasonry, was forbidden in some Catholic jurisdictions and discouraged in others. That was back in the 19th and early 20th centuries. The higher Scottish Rite degrees and Palladium Rite. In the hard-to-obtain book, The Hidden Life in Freemasonry, which I have, written by 33rd degree C.W. Leadbeater for Masons, one learns in Masonic language what the upper degrees of Freemasonry can get into. On page 175, Leadbeater refers to when a clandestine meeting is held, even though a duly IM be present, the inner recognition is not given. What? Why are these Masons being so secretive amongst themselves? Because the liturgical fun, magical and occult, and politics begin. And the lodge quits just being a private club for ritual. How this operates will be discussed. First, we'll discuss the 30th to 33rd degree Scottish Rite degrees. This is where it is becoming evident that Lucifer is the god of Masonry. Yes, this is what I told you. That's when they find out who the light is. They're asking more of this light. They're finding out who the god that they're seeking is. 30th to 33rd degree. Leadbeater says, it must be, of course, understood, the conferring of the higher degrees puts certain definite powers in the hands of the recipient. Certain powers, definite powers. Where does such power come from? The 33rd degree links. Now, this is what, you see, this came out, and then you have Bill Cooper saying that, and that's where I got it from, Bill Cooper. But I also, you know, of course, I bought the book to make sure it said this. In the 33rd degree, the 33rd degree links the Sovereign Grand Inspector General with the spiritual king of the world himself, that mightiest of adepts who stands at the head of the Great White Lodge, in whose strong hands lie the destinies of earth, and awakens the powers of the triple spirit as far as they can yet be awakened. The Hidden Life in Freemasonry, page 302. Other Masons like Manly P. Hall, 33rd degree, and Foster Bailey, 32nd degree, have said similar things. Foster Bailey calls the spirits that Masons communicate with the Illuminati. These spirits initiate these higher Masons into becoming light bearers themselves. You know, let me stop right there. You see, that's exactly what happened at 2010, the movie, which was the second movie after it was the second, the subsequent movie of 2001, A Space Odyssey. In that, many light bearers were born. There were two suns that were born in the sky at that point. If you remember when I did that, it said some very interesting things at the end of that movie. And you see that many light bearers were born at that point. You saw many suns, smaller suns coming out, monoliths. So, the Illuminati, he says here, so in other words, these spirits initiate these higher Masons into becoming light bearers themselves. The Illuminati assist at the unfolding of the consciousness of the candidate until the time comes when he can enter into light and in his turn become a light bearer, one of the Illuminati who can assist the Lodge on high in bringing humanity to light. Now, you see, this Illuminati obviously is the hierarchy. You see? The externalization, his wife wrote the book, The Externalization of the Hierarchy. These spirits have various Masons. Masons Harold Waldwin Percival and Lynn F. Perkins claim their books were inspired by spirits. Is 33-degree Mason Leadbeater talking about linking up with the Christian Christ? Of course not. The HOATF makes the actual links both with himself and also through himself with that mighty king. This stage combines the wonderful love of Horus, the sun, with the ineffable life and strength of Osiris, the divine father. Hello? Are we communicating now? And Isis, the eternal mother of the world. Remember, we were talking now. I'm going to stop right there. Remember the Shriners thing, that the moon there, the crescent moon of these, of Islam, is the mother of, the eternal mother of the world, of all the people, the mother of all. And of course, the star is Hubal. And the sword was said to be the Apostle Paul. So, let's continue. This initiation connects the Mason with the pagan Egyptian Trinity? That's what he says. Leadbeater goes on to say how much glory, spiritual power, and worldly power the Mason has after this initiation. Page 304. The next page, Leadbeater begins the section telling the Mason how to use the powers, quote-unquote. He talks about the liberal, yes, I remember that it talked about the when the Catholic priest does a thing, it attaches light spirits to people. Listen to what he says. Let's see what it says. He talks about the liberal Catholic Church. Yes, men who have left the liberal Catholic Church have verbally and in writing talked about how satanic it is. Let me read that for the Catholics again. He talks, Leadbeater, this is a Freemason, he talks about the liberal Catholic Church. Yes, men who have left the liberal Catholic Church have verbally, are you listening? And in writing, talked about how satanic it is. Leadbeater continues, yet when one of these bright spirits is attached to us by a Masonic ceremony, we must not think of him as either a director or an attendant, but simply as a co-worker and a brother. I hope you're listening. The next chapter, Two Wonderful Rituals, describes Egyptian rituals to Amen-Ra. Amen, you know, Amen-Ra. And the blazing star, which is the dog star. They sing a hymn to Ra. Ra in in Hebrew is evil. The logos, so let me read this again. The next chapter, Two Wonderful Rituals, describes Egyptian rituals to Amun-Ra and to the blazing star. They sing a hymn to Ra, the logos, the sun god, thanking him for his response. They take a sacrament to Osiris. The next ritual described may possibly refer to part of the secret palladium rite, as it refers to the triangle of adepts. The palladium rite, calls its groups triangles. Now, I told you about that with Alice Bailey. I have a book called Running God's Plan, which is they don't want us to have this book for some reason. And they talked about these groups being triangles. So the palladium rite refers to the triangle of adepts. The palladium rite calls its groups triangles. He talks about chanting invocations and then angels appearing. Then the Illuminati salute is given to the angel, where the left arm is placed above as if shielding one from light. Sounds like a vampire. Leadbeater indicates eventually the temple of the angels draws 9 orders of angels. 9. Which are not limited to one solar system. Page 342. If the reader is still with me, this author would like to describe some about the Palladium Rite. This author has never been in the Palladium Rite, and it is secret. So how would a person find out about such a rite? One expose of the Palladium Rite that appeared to be a hoax in the 19th century had made people leery that the rite even exists. When a news conference had been held, they were unable to produce evidence. One ex-Palladist, Mason, has problems getting people to believe it exists. Goddess Pallas Athena, the sign of prudence and circumspection, was used especially by Francis Bacon because it had the double meaning from Greek mythology of spear shaker or shake spear, his pen name. Palladian means pertaining to the goddess Pallas or characterized by wisdom. And palladium means an object that is essential to the safeguarding of a community. Like Paladin from Have Gun Will Travel, you see. Palladium is also the state of Pallas Athena, upon which the city of Troy depended upon for its safety. Pallas Athena, and that's P-A-L-L-A-S, not Pallas as you would think. Pallas Athena is also called Athena by the Greeks and Minerva by the Romans. Sir Francis Bacon wrote the name Athena in his Rosicrucian books as A.A. Alfred Dodd goes into details of letters, poems of people to Bacon, and writings of Sir Francis Bacon which use Pallas Athena. A secret palladium rite had existed at least from the time of 1730. Perhaps it was itself was from yet another earlier palladium rite, or perhaps it drew from some Rosicrucian source. At any rate, it was reactivated in 1884. At the public library was the respectable Encyclopedia of American Institutional Fraternal Organizations by Schmidt. Under Free and Regenerated Palladium, it reads, "This Masonically linked society remained dormant until 1884. After this date, it was reformed to impart new force to the traditions of high-grade masonry. The society admitted men and women, the former to the grades of Adelphos and companion of Ulysses, and the latter to the grade of Penelope. The society held all its councils in strict secrecy. It never printed any proceedings and very much restricted its membership," page 119. On page 161 is an article on the home palladium, which is a fraternal benefit society, apparently for members of the palladium rite. The Palladium Rite created by Albert Pike is totally Luciferian. It is androgynous. I hope you're listening. Androgyny. It's androgynous. In the larger cities, activities are carried out in Masonic temples, which allows women to slip into the temples without arousing attention. All of this will be strongly denied by the Masonic lodges. Members are selected mainly from higher levels of the Scottish Rite, although the members can come from other rites too. The Palladium Rite has its own budget. Its power over the Masonic Lodge does not derive from being a part of the power structure, but from the careful selection of Masons that participate in the Palladium Rite and their distribution throughout the various rites of Masonry in their controlling bodies. You see, these people are up to evil. I mean, imagine they have all this time to do these evil things and to participate. And you wonder why America is in the condition it's in. It's astounding that even Wicca has grown in the last 20 years pretty much heavily. And so you heard earlier that it said if you are a satanic or a Luciferian fellow or woman, you can get right in these organizations very quickly. It really is amazing. The Grand Central Directories are, and from there to the Supreme Councils, Grand Encampments, Grand Orients, and Grand Lodges are the nerve centers of Masonry from which orders emanate. The Palladium Rite is popular among those positions of power. It is said that the leaders of the Palladium Rite are allowed to visit or join the B'nai B'rith lodges, which means they would have to be Jews. Listen, William Schneblin is presently a Christian author. Yeah. Prior to becoming a Christian, listen, he had been initiated into the Palladium Lodge in Chicago named Resurrection Lodge No. 13. He described some about getting the Palladium degree of Paladin in his recent book, Masonry Beyond the Light. That lodge claimed to be derived from the European chapter of the AISB. Higher Masons became Illuminati, which go by several names, one of which is Masters of the Temple. A single illuminated person is called an Illuminatus. And I do believe that that is exactly what the first degree, I'm pretty sure it's something like that, of the so-called Illuminati. Summary. This chapter has shown how Freemasonry is the one world religion. Freemasonry has created hundreds of organizations. Freemasonry itself is the pagan mystery religion, which at the highest level becomes Luciferian worship. It has quietly played the dominant political role in the United States even before independence. For more details on political role, its political role, see the appendix. I have tried to leave these introductory paragraphs without footnotes to help the flow of reading. Alice Bailey is so well known that these things really don't need footnotes. However, the question can be asked, how much would her husband and her have talked about things, considering Masons do not talk or tell the truth to their wives about the lodge? This is a legitimate question. Some wives have found out that their honest husbands lied for decades about the lodge. There are some rites which are designed for both sexes, like the Palladium Rite and the Order of the Magi, which admit women. Also for women is Co-Masonry, Order of the Eastern Star, and Daughters of the Nile. The high level of importance that Alice Bailey held indicates she was in communication with whoever in Masonry she needed to cooperate with. Number 2, the Watchtower, June 15, 1963, page 377, says, the Rosicrucians go back to Great White Brotherhood of Egypt. Number 3, Benjamin Krem, a student of Freemasonry, the occult, and Bailey, believes the hierarchy has assigned him the job of John the Baptist to announce the new Messiah named Lord Maitreya. See chapter 1.4. Benjamin Krem is describing the one world religion that is coming in the age of Aquarius, states, the ancient mysteries, Freemasonry, will be restored, the mystery schools reopened, and a great expansion of man's awareness of himself and his purpose and destiny will be possible. Benjamin Krem, The Reappearance of the Christ and Masters of Wisdom. London, Tara Press, 1980, page 182. The mystery schools will be reopened and men will go to them as they now go to university to learn and to take the disciplines that will prepare them for initiation and so into the hierarchy. The new religion will manifest itself through organizations like Masonry, he says. Ladies and gentlemen, and there's much more there. Amazing. Amazing how much evil people have time to do and participate in. So, I don't know what you think, folks, but I know that this is quite interesting. So, let me see. I guess that's where we're going to close today. And we'll pick it up next week. I hope you're learning. I hope that this is useful to you to connect dots in your lives. And so that you will understand as you see these signs everywhere, you'll begin to understand what's really happening around you. When President Kennedy was killed, it was a Masonic rite. If he was killed. It really is strange. It really is crazy just how much is going on in this world. And no wonder it's seeped into the devil and his children. They have a lot of time on their hands because they don't have to go to work a job. Their job is to get themselves up in high in these degrees, etc., etc. Very, very strange. Yeah, there's a few charts here. So if you have the book, we'll be going on to chapter 13 next, 1.3, excuse me. And then we're on page 131. Boom. Well, you've been listening to Saxon's Creed Radio Show. I'm David James, and until next time, study to show thyself approved.